Hey everybody, you are listening to From the Peak to the Pit. I'm Allie Peak with TJ Pittinger, and we've been talking about doing this kind of podcast for several weeks, but this is actually the first one that we're going to have ever put together. I'm pretty excited, are you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you agreeing to do this. Not many people ask a mom that's got twins and pregnant with twins to start a podcast, but here we are. We've been talking about doing it, like you said, for a while, and it's cool to sit down and just kind of get going. So I appreciate you, like I said, doing this and jumping on here with us. But tell me a little bit about your background. Tell the folks listening what's your background? Why are we doing this? What's going on here?
So I feel like the old lady in the broadcasting field when you've been doing it for as many years as I have. I feel like I definitely feel older than my actual age, but I have been involved in sports broadcasting for over 15 years now at this point. I started in high school. I did stuff with Spectrum, which at that time was Bright House and Time Warner. So I've been with them through three name changes, which is crazy. I hosted several shows for Sun Sports over the years. And I actually think that my biggest passion was radio. I did a radio show for iHeart, which was Clear Channel, and then switched over to iHeart while I was with them, covering college sports. And I come from a big old college football family, so there really wasn't a whole lot of option whether or not I became a big fan. So here we are.
Yeah, for sure. And then I kind of got started with everything with the Big Three Roll Up. So if you haven't listened to that, a podcast kind of covering Florida State, Miami, college football in the state of Florida, and then we get into a bunch of other stuff. Jumped on a couple of podcasts with Chris Landry. Really enjoyed doing that, but just kind of thought that he did that better on his own. It kind of made more sense from a timing perspective because he does about 8 podcasts on our network. And so Allie and I got to talking and thought this would be a good idea. And again, here we are. So,
well, the Big Three Roll-Up has kind of become really like a phenomenon. I mean, I discovered it through Twitter, which I think is like the best, worst invention, in the history of the planet. But it is astounding how many listeners you guys have, your events that you've been planning, how many people show up to them. I went to SeaWorld and saw all the people that recognized you guys in the logo, and it's really crazy to see how fast that has grown.
You know, it's neat looking at it, and, you know, those guys started, it's just about 4 years ago now, and Josh and myself have been doing it for about 3 years with them. But it really just started as a couple of guys talking crap about college football over a bottle of Jameson, just like we're doing right now. No bottle of Jameson, but around a kitchen table,
right,
talking about sports.
In 6 weeks, we could do it over a bottle of Jameson.
Yeah, we'll be set. So to watch it grow, to go from that to the point that we're at now, I always want to say they, but to the point that we're at now in doing events with SeaWorld, doing events with major brands across the state and across the country is just so cool, and we have a great time with it. You know, I mean, we cut up, and we're not always the most professional, and
I think that's what the attraction is, though, because there are plenty of people out there who do this. You know, I don't want to say professionally because I don't want to take that away from what you guys are doing, but they do it in maybe a more censored way or a more structured way, and sometimes fans just want an outlet to vent.
So to me, that's what's really cool about it is, you know, I think the best way you could describe the Big Three Roll-Up is it's truly just barbershop talk, right? Like it's 3 or 4 guys sitting around talking about their favorite teams, talking smack, talking just whatever, and we just have a good time, like you said, venting, outletting. We do a show on Sunday called Same Energy Sunday where people can call in and talk about their favorite shows. I mean, you were on radio. I mean, people love to get to talk in or call in and talk and hear their voice and hear what they've said about their teams, what other people are saying. So, yeah, it's just a really neat experience. It's, you know, Josh Newberg is on there, Kev Silk. Josh does write for CBS Sports 24/7. So he's a little bit more professional, I guess, on that side. But at the end of the day, it's 3 or 4 fans talking about sports. And that's really all any of us ever wanted to do, right? Like, we all grew up big fans of Florida State and Miami. Through the years have become bigger and bigger fans and become more connected. And at the end of the day, it's just a really cool kind of outlet place that we can talk about sports, you know, not too dissimilar from what we're doing here today.
Right. Well, you know, and when you cover a team for a TV station or you write for somebody, you do have to have some bit of objectivity in there. And I think sometimes that's almost frustrating to fans because they want to see these writers either criticize the coaches or the play calling or, you know, the players themselves or whatever. And you guys kind of have the ability to do that a little bit more than maybe the average person that covers one of these teams. And I think that's kind of cathartic for your listeners.
Yeah, for sure. If you have, you know, whether they're sources within a program or just people close to a program that you've got to interact with every day, you know, if you're at Florida State and you've got to see Willie Taggart every day,
right?
It's harder to start the campaign to get him fired. We need to get rid of it. And same thing at UF. You know, if you're upset at something that's going on at UF, you do. You have to kind of censor yourself a little bit more.
When I covered Florida, my husband is Eric Wilbur. He was a punter for the 96, or excuse me, gosh, he's going to kill me, the 2000 National Championship team. And there would be times where I would write things or I would say things on the radio or on television, and Urban Meyer would call Eric and ask him to ask his wife not to say things like that. So, I mean, I get it entirely. If you are around these same people all day, every day, you do kind of have to be careful about what you say. Even if what you're saying is totally true and
absolutely
accurate, you still have to be careful because, you know, you do have to work with these people.
So you're married to a Gator. You're a big Gator fan.
I am.
I grew up a Florida State fan. A little bit of an interesting dynamic there. I guess a little play on the name from the peak to the pit is the fact that you guys are kind of at your peak right now. Not peak, you know, as far as where Florida's been ever.
Historically, right.
But certainly within the last decade.
Oh, heck yeah.
And Florida State's at the lowest point they've been in the last decade, without a doubt. And again, that's probably not the only reason we picked the name. I mean, obviously, there's a play on the last names there. But tell me about Florida. What are your thoughts on UF? Just coming off a big game in Baton Rouge this weekend. Looked really, really good. LSU just looked a little bit better. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, this is not the way that I saw the game going, really, at all. I kept saying all along, you don't get into a track meet with LSU in Baton Rouge at night. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. I thought that Florida's best chance to win was to really slow the game down. And if it was going to be a low-scoring, close game, it was going to be a Florida victory. If it was going to be a point scoring bonanza, it was going to be an LSU, you know, slaughter. I think that the score is less indicative of the game than it would appear if you just looked at the box score. And interestingly, I feel like Florida's gotten basically zero respect this entire season until they lost to LSU, which is a wild concept. You know, Florida going into the Auburn game, the talk was, you know, Auburn's going to destroy them. Auburn is a top 10 team. Bo Nix is the next coming of Tim Tebow. You know, this is the real deal. This is where Florida gets exposed. Florida didn't play particularly well in week zero against Miami. They've played okay, you know, enough to win every game since then. They're down Franks. I mean, it was set up for Florida to get destroyed and then everybody to be able to say, see, we told you so. So then after the Auburn victory happens, I feel like that kind of changed to, well, Auburn's not really not that good. There really wasn't a whole lot of talk about, well, maybe Florida is better than we thought that they were.
Yeah.
So then you
and maybe Auburn didn't look that good because Florida made them
right,
look that good.
Right.
Maybe
and that's
Florida
totally
was the reason that Auburn didn't look that good.
And it felt like the national media didn't consider that as a possibility. And listen, I think it's silly to think that a true freshman, you know, five games into the season is going to go into the swamp and put up these ridiculous numbers. So I think the statements to begin with were pretty stupid. But then to flip so quickly to, oh, well, he's a true freshman. They must not be good. They must not whatever. And we'll see if Auburn's good. They've got a lot of teams left to play on their schedule. We'll get to see really who Auburn is down the line. But I think that Auburn's a decent team. And I think that Florida did something that most people didn't think that was going to happen. But then this LSU game, you know, I think that, again, it was Florida was not going to win. There was 0% chance that Florida was going to go into Baton Rouge at night and win. But I think that most people were pretty impressed. And this is the first time in a long time that I think Florida's getting some national respect. And it's interesting, though, that it came after a loss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, Florida didn't look great against Miami, and Miami's looked, you know, pretty poor
terrible,
since then.
Right.
You know, if Felipe doesn't go down, Florida probably loses to Kentucky. Like, I don't know that he leads the comeback. So I think that's maybe where some of that narrative from before was. I thought I was in the swamp. I thought the win against Auburn was great. I mean, their defense was definitely great. I think what was so impressive about Florida, you know, last week against Auburn to this week against LSU was they did it a different way. Now they did lose. So they didn't find a different way to win, but they played such a different way in that they went toe to toe with LSU. They matched them every scoring drive in the first half. They came out the first drive of the second half, and
that first drive from the second half was like masterful.
Took the lead in Baton Rouge in the second half. You know, the problems were just on defense. They could not stop LSU,
which is an interesting thing.
It was
backwards for Florida,
right? Yeah, we haven't seen Florida with an offense that could go toe to toe with anybody since
2009 was the last time that Florida had put up 250 yards or more every single game this far into the season. And when you think about that, that's pretty wild. And you know, if you've been a Gator fan for a long time and you're honest with yourself and you think back to, like, the 2006 season, for instance, that was my senior year. That was my husband's senior year. They barely won a lot of ball games.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about how that team didn't have the offense to compete with the other top 10, you know, teams in the country. That, yeah, they were undefeated, but they weren't a legitimate contender because they didn't have a good enough offense. And that's when Tim Tebow was a freshman, and there was a lot of calls for him, for Chris Leak to be replaced. And I mean, Chris Leak is really one of the unsung heroes of Florida football lore, truly. He's incredibly talented. He did a lot of really good things for the program. His name wasn't Tim Tebow, and he happened to be on the same roster as him, so that doesn't help, you know, the legacy. But I think when we look back on that 2006 team, we talk about, like, how gutsy they were, what fighters they were. They wouldn't say die, essentially. But in reality, if you lived in that moment, it was basically like, this is a decent team that is skating by and probably shouldn't be as highly ranked as they are until they ended up winning it all. So it's not a narrative that Florida's unfamiliar with, and I'm in no way saying this team is equal to the 06 team or is going to have the same kind of success by the end of the year, but it's the same idea. And part of it is Florida fans are kind of assholes. They always want more. We're never satisfied. Hey, you put up the 8, that's great, but we'd really like to see 45 a game. Yeah, I mean, there is no chill with Florida fans for the most part. They can't just enjoy the ride.
I think fans in all of the Big Three are somewhat spoiled, somewhat entitled. You know, Miami dominates the 80s. Florida State goes on a streak in the 90s of 14 straight seasons finishing in the top four. Florida has, you know, really runs the early 2000s with, or like the mid to late 2000s, but Florida State was kind of down in the 2000s, and so was Miami. And so, you know, teams have gone on these long streaks. And for all intent purposes, I mean, all three schools are top 15-ish programs all time. So they're, you know, they are programs that, you know, demand that respect. But the expectations are so high for all three teams. It doesn't matter. You know, Florida State's gone through very little coaching transition ever. Miami just always feels like they're going to have that. And then Florida being kind of the premier, the oldest program. All three fan bases are like that at times. And
yeah,
just so
sure.
entitled, such spoiled brats. You know, a team plays poorly or does something poorly, and it's just not enough.
Right, you want the coach fired. I mean, again, we talk about how Twitter is like the best, worst invention ever. If you looked at Twitter, you know, after that Miami game, there were people that wanted Dan Mullen fired after he won
Yeah.
Week one has all the spotlight on him. And this is a coach that took a team from 4 wins to 10 wins in one season in the hardest conference in college football. And I know I'm going to get called an SEC elitist as we continue through these podcasts, but it's true.
Yeah.
And I think that something that Gator fans maybe don't understand is that I think it's actually easier to go from 4 wins to 10 than it is to go from 10 wins to 11. So if Florida were to stay on that path for 10 wins, which I think is doable for the rest of this season, that would still be a huge coup for UF. But
I think to go a little deeper into that, I think a much tougher schedule, too.
It is a much tougher schedule this year.
You had Miami to start the year. I don't think they're very good, but, I mean, it's still a rivalry game. It's still week zero. It's early. And then you have Auburn at home, you know, having to go to Baton Rouge as opposed to playing them at home. I mean, Georgia's always the same being in Jacksonville. But, yeah, I think it's a tougher schedule. And like you said, you know, just that consistency is huge. And so, yeah, I think this will – if they can win 10, which I think they will. I think my prediction was 9-3. But I don't. I mean, they may win 11 this year. I think the only game they'll be a potential underdog in is the Georgia game. Maybe we'll get to them a little later with their issues over the last week. And then I think the Missouri game on the road will be tricky. I think every other game, if Florida loses it, it's a really, really bad loss. Like, they shouldn't lose anymore outside of those.
Right.
Maybe those two. They lose to Florida State, it's a problem. They lose to South Carolina, it's a problem.
When you think about the way that things have played out, so, like, with South Carolina beating Georgia this past week, which we'll talk about down the line, Florida has to drop two of the three between South Carolina, Vandy, and Missouri if they were to beat Georgia. Think about that. If they beat Georgia, they have to lose two of those three to not go to the SEC championship game. And that's kind of a wild concept for a team that won 4 games,
two
years ago. And I think that Georgia looks so much more beatable than they did, 3 weeks ago. Essentially, their last two ball games, I think, have given a blueprint to Dan Mullen. But think about being a recruit right now and what you watched in Baton Rouge on Saturday. Because from my perspective, I watched a team that has immediate needs, but a coach that is probably top five in the country. And do I really want to go and be the 7th or 8th five-star at Alabama or Georgia? Or do I want to be one of the first, 1-3 five stars at Florida and know that I have a coach that's putting it together? And then when you think Kyle Trask was a 2-star recruit who didn't play in high school, and he went toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow. His numbers outside of the interception, his yardage, though, is actually slightly better than Joe Burrow's was on Saturday in Baton Rouge. You look at that offensive line, a 3-star average, and clearly they're garbage. If I'm an offensive lineman, or if I'm a 5-star tight end and I see what they're doing with Pitts, I'm all over that.
Yeah, I think Dan Mullen, and not that he ever has like terrible recruiting classes or anything like that, but he's never historically been known as a recruiter that is just going to blaze the trail and light it on fire.
Well, and part of that is, how do you blaze the trail at Mississippi State?
Mississippi State, right. So, but what he... And Mullen's this, anybody that's winning at the University of Florida or Florida State or Miami is going to recruit well, right?
For sure.
Like, the logo on your shirt does just as much as you
do. The state that you're located
for
in.
For sure.
I mean.
So, to me, Mullen, all that considered, Mullen does more with less than anybody else. There's no doubt that he is the best scheming coach in probably the SEC. Like, I'm trying to rack my brain right now. I mean, I don't think Saban's a great...
Well, Saban doesn't have to.
Yeah, he doesn't
and
have to.
And that's the issue. I mean, he may be, but we just don't know.
We've
because when you have
it.
Such an embarrassment of riches, there's no need to figure
just
it out.
Get the ball to your athletes and let them go.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think Mullen's a problem for other teams in state, other teams in the SEC. You know, I think, I don't know, obviously, you're looking at... So you're looking at Georgia right now coming off of their worst performance in the last 2 years. So, somewhat take that with a grain of salt. I don't think they're as good as they really are hyped up to be, but I also don't think they're as bad, as they were. So, like, they're going to get up for Florida, right? Like,
for sure.
Florida and Georgia are going to get up for each
other. That's going to be a bloodbath.
I think it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm planning on going. I think it's going to be a great game again. I think it'll come down to who makes the mistakes. Does Fromm make the mistakes? Does Trask? You know, Florida was driving to tie it up against LSU, and they threw a pick in the end zone. And for all intents and purposes, that was the game, right?
Right.
Like they weren't – I mean, LSU was not going to be stopped. They were going to go – but if they don't, if they tie it up there, who knows?
You know,
it's a coin flip.
Well, there's two red zone – two times in the second quarter – or second half, Florida got into the red zone and walked away with no points, which, one, has been uncharacteristic of this offense this year. Gator fans in general will tell you it's very characteristic of the Gators over the last, you know, several years, but that's not necessarily characteristic of this Gator team. But when you think about, they put together three drives in the second half where they had to go 70 or more yards. That is a different offensive team than we have seen in a very long time, probably since Dan Mullen left Florida. And I do think a lot of that is putting his players in the position to be successful because he doesn't have more stars than LSU's roster. He doesn't have the same athletes that LSU does right now. And I know that might upset some Gator fans, but it's true.
Pretty true, yeah.
But he is great at scheming to put them in a position to do well and to kind of hide deficiencies. That offensive line could have been way more of a problem for Florida than it's been this year because they're god-awful. But he has figured out a way to kind of scheme around that. But with that Georgia game, that's interesting to me is I think, so Kirby Smart is probably maybe the best recruiter in the country. He is, if not the best, one of the best recruiters in the country.
Top three, but without a question.
I think he's a very marginal game day coach. I mean, and so it's interesting because if that game does come down to coaching decisions, Gator fans have to like where they sit because I don't think that it's even close when you're talking about who's going to do a better job scheming on game day and making adjustments on game day. There is still a talent gap between Florida and Georgia. So if that's what it comes down to, that's not something Florida can fix in 1 year. But if it is, does come down to, you know, game time decisions, Mullen's sitting pretty, in my opinion.
I like Mullen way more there. And you know,
Kirby Smart is the stupidest haircut in all of college football, too.
I like Mullen way more in that category. There aren't many coaches in the country that I wouldn't like Mullen more than, as far as a game day coach goes. But you know, you said one thing, and this isn't specific so much to Florida as it just is to everybody. But most coaches do follow one of those two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like most, who would you say? And I've got him in my mind already. And that maybe this is a good transition to get on the other side of the state. But who would you say is the best recruiter and / game day coach? Like, who is the best at both, if you could kind of mirror?
In the country?
Yeah.
Urban Meyer is who I would say. I mean, okay. He's not active right now. But
he was my one or two. I had Jimbo.
Yeah.
Like, I think his offense, he's had to adjust that, and it's become a little bit outdated. Like, doing the pro-style stuff is so, so tough in college when everybody else is running fast-paced and spread and everything else. But
which, basically, we're transitioned to that by Urban Meyer.
Right. So, to me, I think Jimbo's there. Mm-hmm. Like, the active guy that can recruit like crazy, really good on game day. But, yeah, Urban's right there with him, just, you know, hopefully coming to Florida State in the next 2 years or so.
You guys get your hopes up. I hear he's had some mail from USC. So I saw a story today that USC is interested in Jeremy Foley too, which I would be shocked if Jeremy Foley jumped out because Jeremy Foley voluntarily retired from UF. He would still be the athletic director at the University of Florida. He wouldn't. So it would be interesting, to me, if that's actually true. But yeah, I mean, I think Jimbo Fisher fits that mold. I wonder, are we old for these up-and-coming college coaches in general? Are we going more towards like a recruiting department that handles all of those things and our assistant coaches are badasses at going out and getting these guys and our head coaches aren't? Or I don't know. It seems like you're one or the other, like you said, and it's almost like old school to do both.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, when you just look at the trend in college sports, you know, if you, obviously basketball is such a different world, but even guys like Krzyzewski and, you know, Roy Williams and those, you know, just absolute tacticians have had to adjust.
Right,
like,
right.
You can't out-tactician a Kentucky team with five stars or eight right. five stars. Like, you've just got to get on right. board. Like, you can't outsmart those teams or anything. And so Krzyzewski and Roy and all these coaches that are just absolute masterminds are now having to adjust. And so who's to say that's not kind of the same way that football is going, and that, hey, we're going to focus on this, let the recruiting do what it does, and kind of go from there. So anyway, not as exciting. I think you've got good perspective on a lot of things, and we've talked about a lot of things, but what is your perspective of, you know, without even really kind of going into the massacre on Saturday, which Dabo kind of took his foot off the gas really early in the second half, but what are your thoughts on Florida State? Kind of as an outsider looking in, what are your thoughts on, like, the issues at Florida State, Willie Taggart, where they are as a program? I'll just kind of let you roll from there.
Well, first of all, I think, have you seen some of the headlines about Florida State fans thinking that Dabo was classless for running up the score? And it reminds me of this Steve Spurrier quote where he said something like, you know, it's my job to score, it's your job to stop me.
For sure.
And I can't live in a college football world where we're worried about scoring too many points because it might hurt our opponent's feelings. This is like the last bastion of where we don't have to be completely politically correct. I can't wrap my head around a college football world where I have to stop scoring points so you don't cry.
I'm offended right now.
Well, I'm offended. You're offended. But for Florida State in general, I think I am not as connected as you guys are in terms of what's going on inside the locker room and inside the program. So I can just kind of give you, kind of compare it to some things that I have seen happen at Florida. From the outside looking in, Florida State has a roster that is still filled with three top five recruiting classes and, you know, a lot of really good athletes. It shouldn't be that hard to win in probably the worst Power 5 conference that there is. With that being said, when Urban Meyer left Florida, that locker room was filled with top 5 classes, incredible athletes, but it was so broken that we are now 10 years into still repairing that. And I know that to be a case because I had a brother on the team at that time. My little brother played for Florida. He played 2 years for Urban Meyer and 3 years from Will Muschamp. And so I know the kind of problems that were going on in that locker room that nobody really was aware of. And so if Florida State has any of those kind of issues where they really needed a full culture change, then that is something that is going to take time. And Florida State fans are going to have to be patient, and it's not necessarily about recruiting or even about coaching. It's literally a culture change. With that being said, I think Willie Taggart's in over his head. This is a guy who has never stayed anywhere long, and he has had moderate success at the places that he's been and left before he's had time to have superstar success. So who knows, like, what would have happened at USF had he stayed there for 10 years? Who knows what would have happened at Oregon had he been there? I think he's a guy that's easy to root for in that Florida State seems like the top of the mountain. You know, when he had his introductory press conference and he talked about growing up a Florida State fan, those are the kind of people that you root for to be successful because they're at the place that they consider home. It's not a stepping stone. And so I think that really, in general, he had kind of everybody's support, not just Florida State fans, but fans from the outside saying, like, this is what's right with college football. This right. is what we want to see.
Did you buy a visor, a Garnet Gold
I
visor?
I did not. I withheld making that decision. But I think you kind of see glimpses of him being in over his head at some of his press conferences when they lose. Like, the hydration stuff was ridiculous. When you're talking about a team coming from Idaho and they're in better shape than you are and you live in the state of Florida, like, I felt like that felt like a cop-out. There's a few times where he's kind of pointed the finger at Briles when things have happened, as opposed to saying, I'm the head coach. Any decision that happens is on me. You know, and I think that those things are the things that if I'm a Florida State fan, I'm maybe the most concerned about. But I don't know. I mean, do you know anything about the culture in the locker room, or what? Or have you been told things that would lead you to believe that that could be the case?
I think there are definitely culture concerns. To compare the culture, though, to anything like kind of some of the UF culture issues that were happening during the end of Meyer's tenure there are just ludicrous, in my opinion. Like, I don't think it's – I think there are culture issues here and there, and some of those players are no longer with the team.
When I say culture issues, I'm not saying necessarily that, like, somebody went out over the weekend and got arrested and it got covered up so that he didn't get punished. I'm saying more like, let's say when Fisher first took over, he had a policy that you have to earn your place for everything that you do. He didn't care if you were a walk-on, a starter, a third string, whatever you played, you earned everything that you got. And then by the time he left, maybe it was that, you know, so-and-so skipped 5 a.m. runs, but it's okay because they had, you know, a massive game the week before, so we're going to let it slide, but at the same time, we're going to punish that third stringer that did the same thing. And so it could be culture issues like that, as opposed to, you know, hiding arrests or beating your girlfriend or things, you know, to that
other effect. Issues that we've had. Now, I really haven't, none of that has been made, obviously none of that has been made public.
Right.
Even in some of the smaller circles that, you know, not that I just have
that would maybe access. Know.
Yeah. But none of that has really come out.
And it may not be the case, so Florida State fans, don't jump on me. Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, sometimes things are not as they appear.
Yeah. No, I really haven't heard of any of that. You know, none of that's been made clear to me or even alluded to me. And I think there's this perception that there is a bigger culture problem at Florida State than it's easier to justify.
Yeah.
It's easier to explain it. You know, Florida State went 7-6 in Jimbo's last year. You know, a really, really tough loss to Alabama in the first game of the year where you lose your starting quarterback and you have to put in a true freshman to then play the rest of the year. There are no doubts in my mind. People say that Jimbo was checked out. People say that he had one foot out the door. He stopped recruiting. I think his recruiting was suffering in that last year. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were below 500 the entire year until we played Florida the last game of the year and then played our bowl game. We were 5-6.
Well, and if you look at the rosters and the signing classes, I mean,
he was doing well. He had just pulled in, just before he had one foot out the door, he pulled in Cam Akers, five-star out of Louisiana. He pulled in Marvin Wilson, five-star out of Tech. So, like, his recruiting was fine, and he would have finished with a top 15 class, probably getting pretty close to the top 10, had he not left for Texas A&M.
Sure.
And so there's this perception among Florida State
fans. The cupboard is bare.
Yeah, that, and there's this perception that we need to get rid of these Jimbo guys. Like, this culture, we've got to fix it. I'm telling you, Florida State's struggling right now. We're 3-3. I think we make a bowl game. We'll go more into that later. I think some things are starting to improve.
Right.
But I'm telling you, some of these Jimbo guys are the only reasons we're winning games. Cam Akers is a Jimbo guy.
You don't want to get rid of your five stars because of the coach they were brought in by.
Marvin Wilson is a Jimbo guy. Tamorian Terry is a Jimbo guy. James Blackman, who Taggart didn't even want James Blackman when he was at USF, didn't even recruit him. Is a Jimbo guy. Not that he's lighting the world on fire, but
you fan do favorite. Have to have a quarterback.
Yeah, you have to have some of these Jimbo guys,
right?
And you know, culture matters. FSU players wanting to be there matter. I understand all that, but I just don't think that Taggart is recruiting at the clip to replace those guys. And at the end of the day, you can be as good of a coach, you can hire as good of coordinators and Briles and Leavitt if he takes over next year and everything else. But if your roster takes a significant step back with Terry leaving and Wilson leaving and Akers leaving, I think it's going to be tough for him to come back. I do see some improvement. I think you're right. Taggart is in over his head. You know, he is having to, you know, some of those recruiting classes you talked about were sacked, were really good, but they were very, very unbalanced, right?
Right.
Like, well, we had more DBs and skill players than anyone else in the country, and we have nobody to
block. That was one of the knocks on Urban Meyer and the last few years at Florida, was that, like, he got so obsessed with winning a recruiting national title that it was more important to just grab as many highly rated guys at any position that you possibly could so that you had that 1, 2, 3 class, but then there was not a whole lot of regard into how they fit into your actual system, which is another problem that, you know, Florida State could very well be having. When you sign 12 DBs and they help your class, you know, be a top 5 class, but guess how many DBs play on Saturday?
Yeah.
Not 12. So it didn't actually help you as much as, you know, it appears on paper that that it helps you. And that could be true. I just, you know, with recruiting, it's one of those chicken or the egg things. I used to cover recruiting. That was actually like the very first thing that I did for Rivals a bajillion years ago, was go to high school games and watch these recruits and stuff. But it is a chicken or the egg thing. If Florida State continues to put a piss poor product on the field, it's really hard to convince these top guys to come here. I think it's easier when you, like, let's say Florida State wins 8 games. I think that's a decent situation to be in for recruiting, because if you're a recruit, you're looking at the situation saying, okay, I can still impact immediately, but they're not so god-awful that they're not going to make a bowl game and I'm going to, you know, be miserable for 4 or 5 years or 3 years or however long I stick around there. So Florida State getting those 7, 8 wins is really important for that recruiting factor, because it's hard to get anybody to want to come play somewhere when you won 4 games.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think making a bowl game, and really I think...
Which, Tigers, you see, ESPN does not think Florida State makes a bowl game. They put
out
an article.
That?
No,
I read it too. Which I think is incorrect.
I do. I think it's incorrect as well.
I was looking at, I believe it was, is it Bill Connolly? Whoever the ESPN like stats guy is, I think it's Bill Connolly.
I think so too.
He gave Florida State an 80% chance to make a bowl game, which I think is pretty on par.
Yeah.
You know, this game against Wake Forest at night, you know, is, to me, it's a coin flip. I mean, they just lost to Louisville, so they're definitely beatable, but they score a lot of points.
They may still be out of breath by the time
they
play.
They score a lot of points, so that game could really go either way.
Right.
Syracuse is really, really bad. Miami's not very good. That's going to be a coin flip game. And then Boston College is really, really bad. So that is an away game at Boston College. We beat Alabama State, and then I think we lose to Florida, you know, minus something crazy happening.
Right.
But I think over the next, you know, what did we just say? Wake Forest, Syracuse, Miami, Boston College, Alabama State, 5 games. I mean, Florida State could go 5-0 in that, or they can go 1-4.
Right. I don't think 1-4 is likely. I think 3-2 is probably your worst case scenario.
Yeah. So in 3-2, they get to 6-6.
Right. They make a bowl game.
And I think they'll win that bowl game. Not that. I mean, winning or losing bowl games, unless it's like the playoff and that, is so...
It means nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't. It means absolutely nothing at all. But
it means something to be able to say that you finished with more wins in the win column.
Then. Yeah, so, and I think they will, because they'll play somebody terrible, like Southern Miss a couple of years ago.
Right.
You know, when they made a bowl, you know, that talent gap is usually just insane in those 6-6 bowls. So they'll probably finish with a winning record. I think if they don't find a way to make a bowl against really one of the easiest schedules that we've had in recent memory, I think you've got to find money to come out with a buyout. But I do think that they make a bowl, right? Like, I think realistically, I mean, they weren't going to beat Clemson one way or the other.
Right.
Really should have.
Does it really matter what it is?
Doesn't
on paper
matter the
because,
final score.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, they lost by 31. The spread was 28. So that's... whatever.
Vegas always knows.
Vegas knew in 2 games this weekend. They should have beat Boise State. The Virginia game, they really should have won looking at it, but that's one that I thought was going to be tough going on the road to UVA early in the year anyway. So, I mean, right now, really, I think they should be 4-2, maybe 5-1, but, you know, they're a game behind schedule. You got to find a way to make that back up. They've got to beat Miami, though. Like, I know that we're saying Miami's a coin flip game. He can't go 0-3 to the Rivals 2 years in a row. Like, that is just, to me, it's inexcusable. Miami's terrible as well. We've got to beat Miami this year.
So are you the type of fan that...
I'm a horrible fan. Whatever you're about to ask, I'm a horrible fan.
Well, are you the type of fan that if you truly do not believe that Willie Taggart is the guy for the future, are you the type of fan that would rather Florida State win ugly now to get rid of him faster, or are you still the type of fan that every Saturday you're like, man, I hate him, he is not good for my program, but we have to win?
No, I mean, I want to win every game. You know, even you know, I want to win every game. Sorry. Yeah, like I just I can see the bigger picture. I mean, when we go into the swamp at the end of the year, we're going to be huge dogs, probably 17 points or more. And I'm going to want to win that game.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't – even if – you know, I feel like overall a Taggart is probably not the right guy for this job. I'd love to be wrong about that. I'd love for him to turn it around and us reel off six wins and get out of the season at 9-3 and go to a big bowl game. I don't think that's happening.
But,
you know, but I'd love to be wrong about but when the moment comes around – and that game is happening, you know, I'm all in on the win.
I think really, truly, you give new coaches 3 to 5 years unless something egregious happens. Either you just get so much worse than you were or something happens off the field or whatever.
Like a 40-year bowl streak being snapped, is that egregious?
I mean, it's not pretty, for sure.
Blown out by rivals back-to-back years.
I think that and eventually it's difficult to find a coach to take your job if, like we can look at Tennessee, for example, if you're going to have so many short coaching stints, it definitely becomes difficult for somebody to be willing to put their name and reputation on the line if they know that their window to succeed is so incredibly small. Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword though, because you know, you don't want to not be fair to Taggart and give him that full time to get, you know, again, not that I think we need to get rid of Jimbo's guys, but to get his people in, get his guys in, to get his system going. But at the same time, if you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but I don't want to get to next year and go 7-5 again and then just say, man, we really should just hit that reset button last year.
Do you think Dan Mullen's success has made the fire hotter for Taggart?
I honestly have never thought about that. I've definitely thought about the two coaches and how, you know, Taggart took over a 7-6 program and went backwards, and Mullen took over a 4-7 program and obviously won 10 games. So I have thought about them with respect to each other, but I've never thought about Mullen's success maybe impacting Taggart more. I think maybe indirectly, just because they're rivals and they recruit against each other.
Well,
they
it's obviously an apples play to other. Apples thing that you can physically look at. I mean, had Florida gone 7-6, does Taggart have slightly more rope?
I don't know. Maybe just a tad. I think the expectations at Florida State are the same no matter what Florida is doing. You know, did Florida State going 14-0 and Florida going 4-8 put more pressure on Muschamp? Maybe in 2013.
Yeah.
But if he'd gone 4-8 in 2013,
he would have lost his job regardless.
Right. So I think the expectations are the same no matter what. But, you know, if you look at all of the coaches that have been hired since, you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, like nobody is, you know, Scott Frost is struggling. Mm-hmm. Willie Taggart.
Mullen's the only one, you know, truly, that has done.
You know, Herm looks okay out of Arizona State.
Yeah, he does, actually. And I think that was a hire that got a lot of
questions. But Pruitt's struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, Loxley just got hired this year and had a really good start to the year, but he's really been struggling.
Maryland's falling off,
you know, so.
Interesting that all three big programs in the state are kind of in the same situation. I don't know that that's ever happened, where they've all three been breaking in a new coach and trying to, you know, kind of find their own footing again.
That, yeah. And really, you know, like we talked about, Miami dominated the 80s, Florida State dominated the 90s. I mean, obviously, Florida won a title in the 90s as well. Florida really dominated the mid-2000s. Florida State's dominated the last 5 or 6 years, you know, minus the last year or two. So it's all cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
What we've talked about a lot in the Big Three Roll-Up is this is Florida's time, right?
Like,
this is their time that they're going to dominate the state for at least the foreseeable near future. Like, anything could happen.
Right.
You know, who knows? But does Florida take advantage of it? Because
it's not getting any better than it is right now.
For sure. Yeah, Florida State will be back. Miami probably will be back at some point. I mean, their cold streaks go for a little bit longer than the other two teams. But Florida State was able to capitalize that in 2013. When Florida and Miami were down, they were able to capitalize on it and win a national title. And in 20 years, we're not going to look back and say, oh, those Florida teams were really, really good. That was cool that how they dominated bad Florida State teams. We're going to say, did they win it or not?
Right.
Did they win it all?
Right.
And so, obviously, much tougher in the SEC, much tougher to have to go through Bama and things like that. But, you know, that'll kind of be how we measure it, what Florida did with this opportunity, with the other two in-state schools really struggling. And Georgia being coached by an idiot, you know, a really good recruiting idiot.
Such an amazing, turn of events, truly, in the last couple of weeks. I personally have always questioned Kirby Smart as a game day coach since he came to Georgia, just because I feel like there has been those moments every season for the last three that you could say, like, oh, what a boneheaded decision.
Yeah.
I can't believe he did that. Or, you know, really just something that just makes you scratch your head much more often than you do with any other coach of a program that has, you know, been at the top the last several years, truly. But it's interesting to see Georgia fans who 2 weeks ago, you know, they called Dan Dopey Dan Mullen. And, you know, and I just, and again, back to Twitter, which we love, to see Georgia fans so quickly turn to, oh my gosh, we're going to get out schemed, or oh my gosh.
By Muschamp.
Yes. I mean, it was like, who wanted to win that game slightly less? Like that. I mean, that was such a bizarre thing to watch on Saturday. But I'm interested to see, you know, let's pivot a little bit to the playoff scenario and how Georgia impacts that, and how many undefeated teams are we going to end up left with? And I know every year it looks like there's going to be several undefeated teams, and a lot of times there's none. But is there anybody that you can see beating Oklahoma?
That's just whose schedule I had pulled up. I don't see Oklahoma losing a game. I think they
play Baylor, right? And Baylor's currently undefeated, but that doesn't mean the Baylor's good because they're undefeated. But that, I mean, unless they play Texas again in the Big 12 championship, right? I mean, Oklahoma gets in undefeated, right?
And would you pick Oklahoma to lose that game?
No.
I mean, even if they played them again,
no.
I don't think that I worry about that. I mean, teams stub their toes, right? Like,
right.
I remember in 2013, we were ranked like 3 or 4, and Oregon was ahead of us and went in as big favorites against Stanford and lost, you know.
I mean, stuff happens.
Alabama lost to Auburn that year. You would have thought Alabama was going in. It does happen every year. But the Big 12, if we look at it conference by conference, Clemson's not losing a game. And, and even if they do, their schedule's not very good.
If Clemson loses a game, I don't think Clemson gets in.
You don't think they get in?
I'm sorry. No, you're good. I honestly, if Clemson loses a game, I think two SEC teams get in.
I think they'll put Clemson in because they won it last year.
Just a nod to the current reigning champ.
I think that they'll let them in. I think the committee, I think ESPN loves Clemson just like they love Alabama, and they will absolutely put them in. But all that said, they won't see a team for the rest of the year, no matter who they see in the ACC championship, that has the talent that Florida State has.
Right.
Now, it's a lot of mismanaged talent, and we looked terrible on Saturday.
I would love if Muschamp could just back into a win last game of the season. Then, I mean, Clemson will be
so dialed in and prepared, knowing
what's on the line, so that doesn't seem possible. I would love it because I love when chaos happens in college football.
It is in Columbia, so I mean there is that. But yeah,
and it's a rivalry, and there is something to be said for rivalries.
South Carolina knows how to take down a big team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they obviously did it this week. I think Clemson wins out. I think Oklahoma wins out. I think the winner of Ohio State, Wisconsin ends up winning out. And
see, the Big 12 is interesting because they have Ohio State, they have Wisconsin, and they have Penn State.
Yeah.
And now all of them play each other. Mm-hmm. So Wisconsin and Penn State would only play if they play in the conference championship, I believe. But Ohio State plays both Wisconsin and Penn State on the regular schedule. So what happens? So let's say they split those. Does somebody come out of the Big Ten with a loss, or do you think that?
I think when you look at that, I think it really comes down to the specific scenarios. Mm-hmm. You know, let's look at a scenario where LSU beats Bama on a field goal.
Okay.
And Bama's sitting at 11-1. Do they get in over an 11-1 Penn State team, or an 11-1 Wisconsin, or 11-1 Ohio State?
I would like to say yes.
12-1. Sorry, that's they win the championship.
Well, so if LSU beats Alabama by a field goal, LSU goes to the SEC title game, unless LSU drops one to somebody else.
Drops
two to somebody else, which isn't happening.
Right, they're not going to lose another.
I mean, they have Auburn and A&M and Alabama. I honestly think this is LSU's best chance to beat Alabama in a long time. I hesitate to ever pick against Nick Saban. I never have. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Maybe after a few drinks in Atlanta, I picked against him when we were playing him. But
I think this is the best shot LSU has. Let's just say if it doesn't happen this year, it's probably never happening ever again. But so let's look at this scenario, though. So let's say LSU beats Alabama by a field goal. So Alabama sitting at 11-1, and LSU goes to the SEC championship game. At that point, from the East, you are looking at Florida, Georgia, or statistically, you have to put Missouri in there because currently Missouri leads the East in the SEC. They dropped a game to Wyoming. I don't think Missouri is who comes out of the East as the winner, but they have to be in the conversation because statistically they are. I think it's Florida, Georgia. I think there's a decent chance it's Florida because of that loss to South Carolina for Georgia. So let's say Florida goes, all right?
Florida
and they get a
the
rematch
SEC.
Against LSU, and they win. What are you looking at there?
Florida's in.
Florida's in because they won, right?
An SEC champion is absolutely
But what
in.
Do you do with Alabama? A 12-1 Alabama team that is
Alabama would be
11 by a field goal.
So
or excuse me, 11-1.
Because they didn't get the championship.
That lost by a field goal.
So if you're looking at a 12-1 Ohio State conference, I think the committee puts a lot of importance on the conference championships.
I do too.
I think that they would take, and the wins that Ohio State would have. Ohio State will have a win against
Wisconsin,
yeah,
and Penn State.
Right. So,
but when you're looking at Alabama, so Alabama, then at that point we've decided that
they've got Auburn wins against Auburn and Duke
and A&M.
I think you've got to go Ohio State.
Which is interesting because I do think if Alabama's scheduling was different this year, that might be a different conversation. And for all the flack that Alabama has taken over their scheduling this year, this is the first time that I can ever foresee a scenario where it may actually bite them in the ass.
So as a Gator fan, let's back out. Would you rather, this is an easy question. You'd rather get a rematch with LSU.
Oh, hell yeah. Sure. You want the devil you know, not the devil you don't know. And I never want Nick Saban.
Yeah, nobody's asking for it. You know, you remember the signs that used to say,
we want Bama? Bama. No, you don't.
No one ever.
No one wants Bama.
I tweeted that last year. I said, just a reminder, your team does not want Bama. And that got lit up when Clemson beat them at the end of the year.
Right.
You know,
Here's the thing. There's not a better coach in college football than Nick Saban.
When
you give him more than a week to prepare, it's even more insane. When I think about the mental mind games between a Dan Mullen and Coach O, I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
I am not comfortable with the idea of Saban versus Mullen. And it's not a knock on Mullen, but I think that Saban is one of the best to ever do it, not just now.
Yeah, and we talked about this earlier. I think the talent gap from LSU to Florida is substantial. The talent gap from Alabama to Florida is
a
gulf that,
insurmountable.
You know, it's just, and to be fair, they have that same gulf with everyone.
For
sure. The only teams
that
are maybe closer, Ohio State, Oklahoma.
Florida's playing with house money in terms of how their talent level is performing, though, so that gap is even bigger there than it is between an Alabama and LSU, an Alabama and a Clemson, an Alabama and a Georgia. And Saban knows how to exploit that better than probably anybody else in the game. And honestly, you know, and I know Florida lost to LSU and Florida deserved to lose to LSU, but there are a few things that are done differently and that game has a different outcome. I don't know that you would ever be able to say that between a matchup between Florida and Alabama at this moment.
Yeah. So, yeah. So who
and you
are
you? Never want to see a team twice in a season. I mean, that's not good for the team that won the first game.
I remember 96. Barely, but I remember it. So who are your four playoff teams? If you've got to call it right now, who are your four teams? I think it's pretty easy, but go ahead. I think three of them are easy.
I think Oklahoma, Clemson, Ohio State are your three. I think what comes out of the SEC probably comes down to Alabama, LSU.
Yeah, like I would, I think I'd take those three that you just gave. You know, obviously if Wisconsin upsets them, then I just flip that pick.
And Wisconsin is good.
I think that would be a really good game.
I think it's going to be a good game.
I think that game is not this weekend, but the next. Yeah, it's the 26th.
Yep.
So you guys are on a bye. Okay. We play Syracuse. It's a nooner. I love Big Ten nooner games that are good because usually the good games.
Because you had nothing until yes, yeah, it's so great. Like, it fills your whole day. Right.
I'm just not watching Duke play now.
Right.
So, you know, obviously the winner of that probably goes on. I like Alabama to beat LSU. I agree with you that this is LSU's best chance in a long time, but I think Alabama ends up winning that. And then I like Clemson and Oklahoma just because I don't think they'll be challenged.
Yeah, and it's the same for me. It's more about them not being challenged. Right. I honestly don't know that I think Oklahoma's that good. I don't think that they end up in the finals, but I think that there's nobody to stop them. And how do you keep an undefeated Big 12 team out? You don't, you know.
And so if it ends like that, it'll probably end with a rematch of Bama, Ohio State,
mm-hmm.
would not hate that.
Right.
And a rematch of Oklahoma, Clemson, which right. I think would be more competitive this year because I don't think Clemson is as good.
I don't think they're quite as good. That doesn't mean they're not great. Yeah. But
and
I don't
it doesn't mean
they
won't
good.
Be in January. You know,
right. No,
they
that's
will
true,
turn
too.
By then. So those are my four as well. I think the same thing. And then, you know, I agree. I think that LSU, if they get there, would probably rather play Georgia. Probably rather, well, I don't know. Would LSU rather play Georgia or Florida, even though they've already seen Florida once?
I think they'd rather play Georgia.
I think that
it comes down to the devil you know versus the devil you don't know.
A lot of that, I think, too, depends on how Georgia looks. I mean, certainly they'd like to play Georgia.
Well, that's true. Yesterday's or Saturday's Georgia versus.
But, even with that, I think LSU, even in a rematch with Florida, would probably still win that game.
This
but,
LSU team is good. Their offense is good. Let's talk Heisman. It's a little early to be discussing this, but you know what is really interesting? I was looking at who has the best odds to win the Heisman, and it is wild to me how many transfers are in there. And do we really have basically an entire coaching culture where they just miss the boat on all of these people? Or is it that they move to an easier conference and so they're doing better? Like what? It's wild to me that Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, I mean, we're looking at guys who all failed somewhere else first and are now in the Heisman talk.
I think Fields failing is a little unfair to him. Just because he did, I guess, it by the letter of the law, if you look at him being beaten out by Fromm.
Right.
But I don't think it's coaches missing the mark as much as it is they're over-recruiting, right?
Right.
Like Saban
right.
recruited Tua and Hurts. And you're going to play the better guy, so that's right. totally fine. Dabo, and not that Kelly is in this conversation, but Dabo recruited Kelly and Lawrence.
Right.
You know? And obviously Kirby recruited three guys from Fields and Eason, who left as well.
Right.
And so I don't think coaches are missing the mark. I think they're almost over-recruiting. Not that that's such a
what
thing.
What about
like
that Ohio State scenario
problem.
Where you get rid of Burrow and you take Fields, and now they're both literally in
they're
the discussion.
Same thing with Alabama, right? Yeah. Like getting rid of Hurts,
yeah.
and now he's
I
in it as well.
I feel like the Hurts Tua conversation maybe is separate from all of these other ones because I think Hurts starts at any other program in the country that he's at, and it is truly an embarrassment of riches in that scenario. But I mean, Oklahoma clearly has a history of finding these diamonds in the roughs, bringing them in, and making them into.
They are the model
it's wild,
for the
right?
transfer portal.
If
you know, they are,
if Hurts were to win the Heisman this year, which I mean, obviously it's very early, but think about that. That would be three in a row, and all three were transfers, right?
For sure, yeah. And so I think it'll be tough for him to win it. I mean, he's currently at the second best odds. You know, I think what's so important now is not who is the best from start to finish. Like, you just need that Heisman moment.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. I do too, yeah. Just give me the best player from start to finish.
I don't like the concept that it has to be the best player on the best team either.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I think there should be some weight to that. Because you've obviously... And there's an East Coast bias. Look at the top 7-10 guys that I'm looking at. Alabama, Oklahoma, LSU, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, Georgia, Clemson, Lawrence pulling in the 10th best odds. They're all on this side of the country, right?
Like,
and the Pac-12 is terrible, so maybe that makes sense.
But they also are playing at 10 o'clock at night when
nobody's watching that. And so, you know, I think Tua ends up winning. But, I mean, honestly, it's just going to be whoever wins the Alabama-LSU game. It's who they're going to give it to.
I really don't want it to be Joe Burrow.
That's going to be – if he goes on the road and beats Alabama and you know, plays fairly well, like it's not – which I think he will. You know,
right.
I don't think it's going to be a defensive struggle in that game either. That's going to be his Heisman moment. It's it's in November 11-9. I was just looking at it. We play BC that week. I'm stoked because I care way more about
so
this
does
big
that
matchup.
Make it harder for Jalen Hurts just based on his schedule? Because the odds that he has that Heisman moment because they're slaughtering all of these teams, it would have to happen in the Big 12 Conference Championship game or not at all,
which
right?
Is that fair? Late? Is that too late? Because
is it
because
it's next
Burrow,
week?
Burrow or Tua will also get an SEC championship game.
Like, correct. And they will have had multiple moments or potential moments throughout the season. So does that hurt Jalen Hurts?
Probably.
And is that fair?
You know, it's like anything else. You know, to me, your goal should really be the team stuff. You
well,
know, it
for
was
sure.
cool when Jameis won the Heisman, but I didn't care about that as much as obviously.
Oh,
the
odds.
It's not fair to him because again, we have this mentality of you've got to have this Heisman moment, and it
but
should
isn't
really
your moment
come...
getting benched in the national championship game, transferring, and then leading the next program back to the national championship. I mean, is that not a Heisman moment?
I think Hurts deserves it just as much as anybody else does. I think Tua has been great. That's why his odds are basically just even money right now.
Although, don't you think it's got to be relatively easy to be a badass quarterback for Alabama?
Oh my gosh, I could throw these five stars that tower over everybody.
Well, and that's how we get the Greg McElwains and stuff. No offense, Greg, but you know what I mean. Like, truly, they can make a game manager look like
all these guys. Okay, so to play devil's advocate, though, if we're going to give Hurts a little love because he doesn't have, you know, a potential for a Heisman moment, can we also maybe take away from him a little bit and say how much of it is the system?
Right.
If they've had three guys come in there. So I want to play devil's advocate with that. If Kelly Bryant would have gone there, I don't think he's the athlete that Hurts is.
But he may have
but
similar
could he be
success.
Doing the same thing?
So looking at this list from that standpoint, Joe Burrow has to be who stands out. Because if you look at Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, those are Clemson. Those are programs that we think about as systems that just plug and play. I don't know that LSU, an offensive player, is anything we think about as plug and play at all. We think about their defense. So is he maybe then having the most success because it's not a system?
I'm the most impressed by Joe Burrow. Not that Tua's not done anything that's not incredible.
Right.
But you just expect it. Your expectations there are that Alabama's going to be amazing. Tua has shown us for multiple games that he is the guy. So I think Burrow is the most impressive. I also think, and he won't win it,
If they beat Alabama,
I think Jonathan Taylor is also really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a quarterback.
He's been to pick up Ohio State.
Yeah.
And
if they win out, he'll get consideration. Maybe he'll finish.
He'll be
third.
There. Yeah.
But it's a quarterback award at this point. It's the best quarterback on the best team.
Yeah.
And that's just what it.
I
has
wish
been and
that
will
it
be.
Hadn't, you know, kind of turned into that. But yeah, I mean, I guess that is what it would be. But you know. I don't know. A lot of these guys have so much time to prove it to us outside of Jalen Hurts, who, I mean, I guess Texas plays him real hard in the Big 12 championship, and that's who we're assuming he gets. But I don't know. It's interesting. I'd like to start a Kyle Trask Heisman Trophy campaign. His numbers were equal, slightly better than Burrow's in Death Valley, and this kid has played 4 games in the last 7 years. There needs to be some sort of, like, I don't know, come off the bench award or something that goes to him, because it's insane that his numbers are even in the realm of possibilities of some of these guys, and they are.
I think Florida is just one of those plug-and-play offenses. Yeah, right.
I don't think we've been that since the 90s, but...
So, all right, we'll wrap this up, but tell me how you see this Florida-South Carolina game going,
I was worried a little bit about this South Carolina game prior to South Carolina upsetting Georgia. I think Will Muschamp is very familiar with some of the guys at Florida still. Some of them are still his guys, which, because McElwain was only there 2.5 years. I think South Carolina was looking for that big upset. I'm kind of glad it happened against Georgia, because I think if it hadn't happened against Georgia, it might have happened against Florida. I think Florida dropping to LSU probably reinforces the focus that's going to happen this week that maybe wouldn't have been there and maybe would have been towards Georgia had Florida figured out a way to beat LSU. I don't like the term trap game. I mean, I think you, as a coach, you got to get your team up for every team. If you're a college player and you can't get up for every team, what are you doing?
Right.
But I think it'll be I think it'll be an interesting game. South Carolina always has a good defense. Will Muschamp is a great defensive coach. It'll be interesting to see who Florida is without on defense. My assumption is that Zuniga and Grenard, will both not play. My assumption is they'll rest them, even if they were to be medically cleared, because if you rest them then, you get the bye week, and then you have them fresh for Georgia. I think Florida wins. I don't know that it's necessarily as pretty as Gator fans will have hoped it to be, but I think they win.
Vegas has it at 6.5 points right now. I mean, today is only Monday, so we've got 5 days until the game.
Yeah.
We won't make this a betting show because Eric's gone, but what are your thoughts there? Do you think it'll be relatively close like that? So I think, and I'll just tell you, kind of as the outsider, the closet Florida fan.
We're recruiting you.
Yeah. Recruitment is open still. I think Florida wins by 13-ish. Like, I think they...
See, 10 was going to be... I think, okay, Florida wins by at least 10. I don't...
And that could be, like, kind of a backdoor cover. Like, I think Florida may kind of lead by a touchdown the whole game and score one at the end to kind of put it away, and just kind of like LSU did last week.
Yeah.
I think it'll be lower scoring than last week. But, I mean, you said that 2 weeks ago, so...
I know. I honestly have been shocked at the number of points that Florida puts up. And I think that most longtime Gator fans will tell you... So they scored 28 points against LSU, right? I am of the mindset that if Florida's offense puts up 28 points, there's very few teams in the entire country that they can't beat because of how good their defense is historically. The problem is Florida's defense isn't good right now. Not only was their defensive line decimated by injuries, but they can't make a tackle. And that was something that we saw week one in Miami that seemed to kind of get corrected the last, you know, several games. But it, you know, reared its ugly head on Saturday night in Baton Rouge. Now, is that because LSU's wide receivers are that good? Maybe. But that's something I'll be looking for in the South Carolina game, because their defense is going to have to play better than they have.
Are you on the Fire Grantham train?
Or? No. No. I'm not on the Fire Grantham train. I
You're not firing coaches on this show like I am?
Not yet, no. I think it's interesting because everybody wanted Grantham to, you know, build a statue to him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but now that we lost a game that everybody would have predicted we would lose at the beginning of the year, if I said to you in August, I think Florida goes 1-3 over the course of October, that 4-game stretch, you would have probably agreed with me. And when everybody looks at that 1-3, that 1 would have been South Carolina that they won, which means we assumed we were losing to LSU. We assumed we were losing to Auburn. We assumed we were losing to Georgia. So when one of those things actually happens, I don't really understand the concept of, like, oh, we need to fire this coach.
Right.
Wait, you knew this was coming.
Yeah. And to be very, very honest with you, I thought it would be, we all thought it would be lower scoring. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm high on Florida. Like, I think they're really, really good. I said that if they could beat LSU, they were a top 3 to 4 program in the country. Definitely would have the most impressive resume, but I'm not a big fan of, you know, you're the number one team because you have a better resume type thing. You know, just, you know, I think, you know, you schedule teams 4 or 5 years out. It's really tough.
Well, I don't think you can control that, but when you beat multiple top 10 teams. Multiple good teams.
I would have been fine with Florida being a 3 or 4. I think you just kind of look and say, on a neutral field, do I think Florida would beat Alabama? No. Then Alabama's in. Do I think they'd beat Ohio State on a neutral field? Probably not.
It totally depends on your voting philosophy. Right. Whether you're voting on...
Are you more on resume? Are you more on eye test? Is it a mixture? What is that mixture? Things like that. But I'm high on Florida. I didn't think they would look as good as they did against LSU. I thought that they would go into Baton Rouge and really struggle. I thought their defense would play better and keep them in it. I didn't think their offense could answer like it did.
Right.
And so I thought, even though Florida lost, they lost by 2 scores, which, you know, they could have easily scored that touchdown there at the end of the game and made it a 1-score game. I think Florida's really good. They really impressed me. You know, they really impressed me in that win. I think going into that game, I would have picked Florida to win every game that was left on their schedule, minus the cocktail party. I think right now, on that neutral field, I would pick Florida to win that game. We'll see how they look against South Carolina. We'll see how Georgia rebounds against Kentucky. Right. Not that Kentucky's great, but those two teams are very similar as far as talent levels.
That game has become a different ball game for a lot of people. I think something that was looked at as a near sure loss has become something that's very winnable for either team, which honestly makes it so much more exciting and fun.
Which is what it should be.
It is.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. We'll do this one, then we'll go. Wake Forest lost 59-62 to Louisville over the weekend. Obviously, they put up a lot of points, 121 points scored that game.
Did you take the over?
I hope so. I hope people did. It was like 28-14 or something after the first.
I know.
And so, Florida State has scored a lot of points this year. They've also given up a lot of points. I need your prediction on Florida State, Wake Forest before we get out of here.
Wake Forest at night, which is not something I ever would have thought of as man, that might be a factor, especially
Winston-Salem.
Right. But I do, you know, there is something about night games at home that
personally I wish it was noon. I wish it was a noon kickoff.
But I honestly don't know what I think is going to happen, but I think this is a gut check game for Florida State because this can determine the course of your season from here on out. I think if they walk out of there with a decisive win, that puts your team on the path for success for the rest of the year. I think it builds some confidence where they clearly need it. I think it's a statement game to the rest of the country that, like, hey, we're still here.
Right.
So, I do think Florida State wins. I think it's probably relatively close, but I think Florida State needs this win.
Big time. This win would be huge for FSU. If FSU wins this game, I think they go 8-4, right? Like, I think they win every game for the rest.
And that's a respectable,
it's really not bad after you drop your first game, and then you basically had a complete cluster, dropped your first game, and then beat everyone else on your schedule that you weren't an underdog to, right? They'll be an underdog in the Swamp. They were an underdog to Clemson. They were an underdog on the road to Virginia.
And those are respectable losses, which is such a terrible thing to call a loss. But when you lose the games that you were predicted to lose, nobody's going undefeated every year. It's just not happening. It's okay in a rebuild to lose the games that you were supposed to lose. It's not okay to lose the games you're not supposed to lose.
So if they win, and I think Wake Forest is the best team that's left on the schedule outside of Florida. Not more talented than Miami, but they're definitely a better team than Miami.
They definitely have it more together right now.
For sure. And so if they win this weekend, I'm very high on the rest of the season finishing well. Hopefully at 8-4, we will get a 7-5 Texas A&M in a bowl game. Mm-hmm. And
nine wins isn't out of the realm of possibilities.
I'd really like to have that Jimbo rematch. Or not a rematch, we haven't had it, but I'd like to get A&M in a bowl game. So that's kind of what I'm pulling for this year.
Do you really want Fisher against Taggart, though?
I think we're definitely...
Fisher knows the players he's going up against.
I think I would. I think it'd be so much fun. I'd be worried about losing for sure.
Yeah.
I just don't think A&M is
But I also good. Think I, if you A&M lose to A&M, A&M, that's very different than, like, dropping your bowl game to, you know, the deaf, dumb, and blind.
Right, yeah.
And I think that that's looked at as much more of a respectable loss.
Absolutely. An SEC team. But I don't think they're very good. I mean, I think Jimbo's a great coach. I think he'll recruit. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, they nearly lost to Arkansas, who is the worst team in the SEC.
It'll be interesting to see what he does, because they have all the resources in the world.
Yeah. The problem is how much time do they give him? Because next year's got to be the year. They're going 7-5 this year.
Well, and they don't have the same money problem that Florida State does. They'll just pay the buyout and move on to the next bajillion-dollar head coach.
The problem is I don't think they would buy him out, would they? Like,
well, isn't
I mean they've got the money to do it for sure, but his whole 75 is guaranteed. And so if Jimbo couldn't make it work there, like, who are you going to get in there that does, you know?
But somebody that's more than happy to take a giant amount of guaranteed money and not really care whether or not they work out.
But they have left on the schedule. They have
LSU. Auburn.
No. They already beat.
Auburn. No, they lost. They lost Auburn. Yeah.
They have LSU and Georgia.
I think they played Georgia. I don't know. Let's look that up though.
If only there was this device that
where you could Google. Hey, so totally off topic. While we look this up, do you think that Dan Mullen called Urban Meyer and asked him for advice on Burrow last week?
Did Dan Mullen call? Do you know the answer to this question?
No, okay. I don't.
I thought this was like a trap question. Yeah, they played Georgia and LSU in back-to-back weeks to end the year, both on the road. So I'll take both of those as A&M losses.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me, right? Like, I'm sure they're still close. I'm sure they're still boys. I mean, why not?
I just think it's an interesting concept and totally not above Urban Meyer to sell out your player for 3 years to your friend that's a head coach.
I've seen him in Gators gear a lot lately.
That's because he wants to be in the Ring of Honor.
I've not seen him in any Buckeye.
He teaches. Grip. He teaches in morals and ethics course at Ohio State currently, and he just opened Urban Meyer's Pint House. In Columbus.
A great place to learn about some ethics and morals.
And they have a 7-0 room for the amount of times that they've beaten Michigan. I mean, he's got a scarlet and gray room up there, but he has been in Gator stuff a lot. But that is because he's the only person not in the Ring of Honor that is qualified to be in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
So I think he's ready to come home. He just wants to be in it. He just has to win.
Be home and then sign with USC.
Probably. He's like, guys, listen, there's like 7 months before I have to report. Out of here.
I gotta go. So, all right. Well, this has been fun. That was the first one. Again, had fun sitting down. Anything before we go? You've got an exciting weekend coming up, huh?
I do. I have my baby shower, which is like... I'm so excited that my sisters are throwing me a baby shower. It is at the exact time of the Florida-South Carolina game, which is basically my worst nightmare, which I'm sure there's probably not another pregnant woman in the country that is concerned about her football game being at the same time as her baby shower, but that is me.
Yeah, I feel like we've all been there, right? Like, you probably thought this would, you told me last night you thought this would be a later game.
Yeah, I was supposed to be at night. You know, his scheduling this week is off.
Yeah, my sister got married at the very time that FSU was kicking off against Clemson in 2016.
See, my dad told us we couldn't have any fall weddings.
So my family does not subscribe to that thinking that you guys had.
And we say no to all fall weddings we're invited to.
I couldn't get out of my sister's. I was in it, I was on my phone a lot. Right. So, and then I was telling you last night, our baby shower for my daughter was in July. Didn't think it would conflict with anything.
Because there's normally nothing.
Nothing going on. Of course, Lionel Messi and Argentina were playing France in an elimination game that ended up being 5-4. I mean, just the best game of the entire tournament. And it was great on replay. So I guess it happens to everybody. But
Eric will get to watch it uninterrupted because our interrupted.
Is it just the girls?
Yeah, it's just girls. So I'm bringing
come over and watch it with
our 5-year-old daughters there because they want to, you know, be a part of the shower. So he's literally kidless during the football game, and I don't get to watch it.
Maybe you should wear one of those really small earpieces, like in The Office. Remember that when Jim and Pam just talked all the time? Like, he can just kind of comment. Or you just tune it into Mick Hubert and listen to that.
I just kind of think, like, since it's for me, is it rude to ask if the TV could be on but muted just so that I could see the score so I'm not constantly looking at my phone?
The day is about you.
I mean, if it wasn't my shower, I wouldn't ask. But
if you're going to somebody else's shower.
Right, I wouldn't be like, hey, by the way, you should be so happy that I'm here that you turn that TV on for me.
Yeah, if it's your day, that's fine.
I might be asking.
Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out today. I appreciate it. We'll figure out time. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Well, I think it was a blast.
Cool.